Welcome to Tech Prom.
Right, okay. Is everything recording?
Yeah, well, let's hope so. This is the very first Tech Prom's live broadcast, live from Vivid Lounge in Ancoats, Manchester. My name's Josh, and I'm also on Twitter as @technicalfault. We've got here two very special guests.
What?
Very special guests.
I'm a regular, thank you very much.
Who are you then? Introduce yourself.
I'm Ian Forrester, and I am a regular, and I am the master of this podcast.
I also have...
Yeah, I'm Nathan Ray, on Twitter as @NathanRay, and I'm providing the half of the technical setup here, the sound mixing, and Josh is handling the sound recording and streaming, and Ian's playing on his laptop doing something else at the moment.
Actually, a huge thanks to Nathan Ray, without whom this wouldn't be possible, because this morning at about 10:30, Ian tweeted, so what stuff do we need to make this happen? And then sort of less than an hour later, when I finally arrived at the venue, Nathan was already here with all his kit set up, which is fantastic, actually. So do you want to talk us through briefly what you put together?
Well, this is just more cups of tea and coffee arriving.
This is brilliant.
Excellent. All I've got here is just two normal bog-standard handheld mics, and I've got a Tie mic on as well, which is an AKG, and I'm just running it through a little mixer, four-channel portable mixer, which runs off AA batteries, and then I've got an XLR to USB cable, which is plugging it into Josh's laptop, and then we're streaming over, Ustream.
That's right, yeah.
So.
I mean, that's amazing. I want to clarify, of course, we are plugged into a Mac, because sadly the Linux box had a few issues, didn't it, Ian?
Proprietary bollocks?
It's a generic USB device. It's not proprietary. It uses
it just didn't work on Ubuntu, which is a problem.
Oh, right.
Although I didn't actually investigate that much about how to actually get it working.
I think if you recompile your kernel, you'll probably find it works somehow.
Screw you.
We're meant to be Tech Grump. Stop laughing, everybody.
Oh, dear. Yes, they're already grumpy and
angry.
Should
we talk about where we actually are? Because, obviously this is live and this is in the Vivid Lounge.
What's the Vivid Lounge?
Vivid Lounge is a lounge, cafe, stroke, I'm not sure, bar.
Is it your downstairs kitchen? Because I've heard you live above it.
Yeah, it's a place it's a very, very nice lounge. Just at the bottom of Islington Wharf. So if you're in Manchester, it's on Great Ancoat Street.
And Josh lives just around the corner, and yet he was half an hour late this morning.
Yes, unfortunately, there seems to be a recurring pattern. It's fine. But next time, it'll be a lot smoother, a lot slicker, especially now as we know what we're doing a little bit. So I haven't really put an agenda together for today I've got a few ideas about things I want to grump about.
Okay then, Josh, you go first. grump away. And your topic was?
You said you went to an event last night or something.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, so last night I went to...
What event?
What's
that's,
that?
That's not us.
That's not...
Oh, rubbish. That sounds like a...
fire alarm. On our first podcast. Fantastic.
Oh, it's gone stop, now. Thank you.
That's good. See, it's all the thrills and spills of live radio happening right now. So last night I went to a very interesting event. Actually, some people on Twitter may already know I was at my very first Star Trek convention.
Oh, God, really? Jeez.
But I think the thing I want to talk about is how in the tech community, there are actually a hell of a lot of fans of sci-fi and Star Trek in particular, yet there is still a stigma, isn't it, don't you think, Ian, about being out about your Star Trek fanship?
Star Trek is sad. Star Trek's full of nerds. It's not geek, it's nerds. It's nerdy, 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 nerdy. And I don't understand how everyone kind of goes, oh, but you're a geek, you really like, you must like Star Trek, and you must really like Star Wars. And you know what? No, I don't.
So it's interesting you say Star Trek is for the nerds, whereas you're sitting there with a Dell laptop customized with your own Ubuntu, and you have like a rooted Android phone and various other geeky, nerdy things. Yet you think Star Trek fans are the nerds?
No, but hold on, wait. See, this is the scary thing. Now I can't kind of like shout and rave like I usually do in tech grunts. I have to like sit still. And so geek is about passion, yeah, and it's more than just kind of like sci-fi and nerdy Star Wars and all that kind of stuff. It's more than that, and. I don't know. I guess, yeah, okay, I can understand that you're really into Star Trek and Star Wars, but that's not necessarily geek. That's just...
It's absolutely geek. It's the epitome of geek, Ian.
No, it's not.
I think this comes down to the different definitions of geek and where geek kind of blends into nerd. And I don't know where to draw. It probably isn't a line, is there? It's probably
a spectrum.
It's a spectrum, this continuum. But I think everybody should be geeky about something.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I don't know about whether... I think when geek turns to nerd, it turns to actually changing your physical appearance to fit in with the crowd and the interest group that you have. So what were you wearing last night? Well, what was the general costume last night?
What I was wearing was simply, you know, a t-shirt, jeans...
Wait, you were wearing something completely different?
No, I was wearing a t-shirt, jeans... And
okay.
Yeah, no. But I was for the first time in my life sitting surrounded by people of all ages and backgrounds dressed in Star Trek uniforms.
Oh, so you weren't in a uniform then?
No, I don't own a uniform.
I don't expect
to do so anytime soon. But I mean, it was great.
Sad.
It was brilliant. You know, they're actually everyone at the event is just, you know, another person on the street, and they happen to enjoy participating in these events by dressing up and by expressing their interest through what they wear.
To be fair, I have a real distaste for dressing up, so maybe that's kind of having a bearing on my kind of thoughts around this stuff.
I don't know what you think, Nathan. Would you ever dress up, or have you ever dressed up?
No, I don't think I would ever dress. I think that I don't know. I'm just making this up as I go along, but
aren't we all?
But like, if you're really really geeky about football. Part of it is dressing up, isn't it? Well, not dressing up, but you wear your uniform, not your uniform, your football strip and things like that.
Yeah, that's true.
But and then for special events, you take it even further and you actually like paint your face and you wear a big wig and all.
See, I find that really weird still, even in that context.
Yeah.
Like painting faces and wearing a weird wig, and I find it bizarre. But yeah, maybe that's where it's all going wrong for me.
Yeah. So I don't know what the difference is, apart from what's kind of socially acceptable or not, between wearing a football jersey and stuff or a thing, except for the thing that when you wear a football strip, it is something from the real world. So it's something that people in the real world wear. Whereas when you're doing it about science fiction and things, it's a lot of it is not like in the real world kind of clothes, unless you go like down the... you know, maybe the Serenity route, where a lot of the clothes are just a mashup of different cultures and, you know, like American Western culture with your brown coats and things like that. But when it comes to Star Trek costumes and dressing up as aliens and things like that, you're not nerding out about a real world thing there. You're nerding out about a fictional thing.
You might be right, but then again, what people are doing is they are the kind of the thoughts and the ideals represented by, you know, fancy worlds like Star Trek or Star Wars or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're representing. That's what they're representing, something they want to aspire to or allude to. Because, you know, Star Trek and the Federation is all about, you know, what's the line? Doing, you know, bettering yourself and the rest of humanity and living in peace with your fellow alien, that sort of thing.
Yeah, okay, so I don't get that at all, but I'll get back to that in a minute, but the one interesting thing I find is why do people dress up in Star Trek and Star Wars type things and not Battlestar Galactica, for example?
They do.
Okay. Just checking. Why do you not dress up in, like, Lost uniforms?
Because Lost is such shit.
So,
before the watershed,
isn't it?
Yeah. So I mean, I know that. I mean, I'm really into Firefly and Serenity kind of thing, and we named our daughter Seren because it's a shorter version of Serenity. But I've never felt inclined to go to a convention or or dress up or anything like that. I just like it, and I like it as in thing. But then if we had a son, we'd have called him Isaac after Isaac Asimov, because I'm a big Isaac Asimov mm-hmm. fan. And but because that's based around fiction, like books and things, nobody dresses up as Daniel or, you know, like the robots or any of the the classic
Isaac Asimov characters. I think you'll find that whenever you go to these events.
Is that my bacon butty?
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
Right, okay. Right, you chat away, Ian. I'm just going to turn my mic down slightly while I start chomping on this.
Well, I think... Yeah, just picking up on what Nathan was saying, these events are actually very, very family orientated. You know, there were two children, or actually quite a few children there. One who was 15 weeks old, one who was, you know, some others who were 3 or 4, and they were loving it. They were really enjoying it. But bringing this back to the tech.
Oh, well, actually, just because this is the key point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is what is it about people that want to, and I'm more challenged. This is not a geek thing. I think this is more maybe thing I just don't understand. Is what is it about dressing up as somebody else, like that escapism, whatever. You know, what is that? I don't understand. I don't get it. Like I wouldn't want to be someone else. I want to be myself. You know, and I think this actually translates back into some of the stuff with Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and like identities, because, you know, I am myself and I don't want to be someone else. Okay, I thought the microphone was too low. Sorry.
Your point, but I think one can always indulge in a fantasy life.
Yeah, but I don't have fantasies to like be someone else. I have fantasies to be myself.
Do you not enjoy the concept of, I don't know, well, it sounds odd when I say this, but role play or... because actually, you know, I even as kids, we would do things like, Cops and Robbers and...
Mm. Well, me and my brother used to play, I've got a twin brother, and we used to play Triffids. Because we had the...
What's Triffids?
Triffids. It's a John Wyndham book about plants, carnivorous plants, which half take up... It's basically a forerunner to zombies, but instead of like these mindless zombies which walk around and kill people, it's these plants. And they're fine until everybody in the world goes blind. And then obviously these hordes of plants are basically... It's not that any of them can run quick or anything, it's but that, you know, if they come at you, there's a thousand of them or a million of them all coming at you at once kind of thing. That's why it's called The Day of the Triffids. And if you read the first couple of chapters of Day of the Triffids and watch 28 Days Later, the first, like, five or six scenes are exactly the same. But instead of it going down the Triffid route, it goes down the zombie route. So. Anyway, so we used to play Triffids, and it used to be like, any room that we walked into, it would be like, which way can we get out of this room if a Triffid suddenly walks in now? Until we watched Jurassic Park, and then it was Velociraptors, and Velociraptors took over. Oh, I'm burping now. Well, I'm eating as we're going along here. So then the Velociraptors took over the thing. And then a few years later, we saw Terminator 2. And then it was the T-2000 or whatever the liquid Terminator was. So there was always something in science fiction which would be the thing that we would be trying to get away from, or kind of pretending to set up traps to trap and things like this and working it out. And but then when we got to, I don't know what age it was, 13 or 14, we started playing with gunpowder and fireworks and building our own fireworks, and then onto other games and things like that. So wow. It became a bit more real life kind of thing. So. But you can get away with that when you live out in the country, not so much when you live in the city centre. So.
Oh, no, you can do it when you're in the city centre as well, if you're very, very cheeky like me.
So we had... but then as the years go by, I know what you mean about role-playing, it's inspiring. There's a lot of people who use science fiction as a starting point for their... creating technology in the real life, like mm-hmm. the Star Trek communicators or
precisely
things. And the one thing I love about Isaac Asimov is he invented the word robotics to have this this catch-all term for the study of robots and things, and he invented his three laws of robotics. And people started reading his books, and engineers thought, well, okay, so computers aren't ready. Well, it wasn't even computers back then. It was these big multivac kind of things, one-off transistors. But we can see that in a few years' time, computers will get powerful enough to power these robotic technologies. And they started building robots before the computers were ready. But then when the computers were ready, there was technologists and engineers there and people who'd set up companies based on these science fiction ideas. And then they were in the lead when it came to automating production lines in America. They changed the world, really, through these automated production lines. And that came from science fiction. So, and I think that as technologists and geeks now, we can look at science fiction and, well, even a Minority Report a few years ago. Now the way he was controlling the computers in that, you know, he put gloves on and was doing all these things. You can basically do that now with a with a Microsoft Kinect device
and connect all the Surface, absolutely,
and things like that. So it's
you've opened up a whole can of worms, because I would be wrong to say that science fiction influences real science, well, in some way, but in that case of the kind of whole Minority Report thing, I just read a really interesting article by Tony Trenside, actually, of all people, about basically it's images under glass, and basically this guy was just saying, you know, he's an interaction designer, which I actually am as well. And all we've been doing for ages and ages is just pushing images over under glass. And that's not the future. That's a really poor future, you know? I think that they're saying about tactile things are really, really important. And, yeah, I say this, you know, with a Kindle in my hand and, you know, but I think there's something about, you know, I mean, like, they're saying about a book. I don't know what it is. Books are not very good for me, but I understand why people like books. I know why people like physical things.
Yeah.
And, science fiction hasn't really explored that. You know, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And we've kind of, like, swayed over.
Someone's just coming up saying that they're out of sausages. We've brought a few people down, and it's quite busy today here, isn't it? Busier than we were expecting.
So. Yeah,
we've run out of
sausages.
Which
is nice.
I got four pieces of bacon. Wow.
Oh my.
Oh my. That's life. I'm gonna be like turn into a pig.
So what I mean, Ian, is that when not all technologists, but when people start designing these things, there's a reason why you have the flip phones, which look like the Star Trek communicator, and the way that robotics have gone, and these different technologies. And I think that when people think up science fiction ideas, they are very much they're basing it on things and thinking, well, let's just do that a few steps in the future. And it makes no sense. Like, why would you have a starship which is set out like a ship instead of set out like a tower?
Mm-hmm.
Because in the Star Trek universe, well, in every universe, basically, the thrusters are pushing sideways to the place where the people are standing. So their gravity balancing floor thing, whatever it would be, not only has to pull them downwards, but when the thrust comes from the back of the ship, has to pull them sideways or whatever to counteract the thrust of the ship. Whereas if you made a ship properly, you would make it as a as a tower, mm-hmm. and everybody would be standing feet towards the thrusters. Mm-hmm. So when the thrusters start pushing, you just turn the artificial gravity down a bit, and it counteracts each other, so nobody goes flying sideways, kind of thing. But the science fiction this is where science fiction gets it wrong. They look at things that are the technologies like ships, which are around today, and they think, oh, I'll make a starship, I'll make a spaceship, and do it the same, and they don't get it right. And I think we'll find that in the future, spaceships will all be based on a tower, a skyscraper, mm-hmm. much more than they will be on thing if we had artificial gravity, I'm talking about. But you know, it's oh, here's your food, guys.
Oh wow! So look at,
at some point, the actual real technology have to step in and actually get it right, if you know what I mean. So,
but you know, going back to usual, I think Ian's absolutely right. Science fiction.
Ian's absolutely right. I we should record that and make sure that goes
Quick,
out.
Is it recording? It is recording. Yes, yeah.
Make sure it goes out over and over again.
Ian's, I often agree with you, Ian.
Oh, thank you.
Ian's right in that science fiction does inspire things, but like Nathan's saying, it's not always in the direction that is the most most usable, most efficient. I mean, you know, we've had video calling for years, you know, in sci-fi, and to date, I still find it a novelty, despite the fact I can use it on a whole range of devices and to talk to a whole range of people. So.
Like FaceTime.
Yeah.
What happened to FaceTime?
FaceTime still works. Yeah.
Who uses FaceTime?
Well, I know that people said, you know, when all the phones started having front facing cameras, oh, this will be it. You know, I've never made a video call. I use Skype to talk to people, and like my kids love talking to my brother in Germany and like my mum up in the Northeast and things like that. But basically, I think it comes down to Skype is for kind of business when you need to see someone face to face, or for grandparents and family to see the kids. And I think that's just about as far as it goes. I don't want to see somebody when I'm just calling them on the bus and facing on the bus.
Anyway, so I'm not quite sure where that whole grunt came from or went.
Well, so so my definition of nerd would be dressing up as something which isn't real in the real world. So that's where I draw the line.
I think it's still really worth exploring the whole kind of identity thing, because I don't think it's a nerd thing. I think it's just some people, like myself, really don't like dressing up as someone else. They're happy with their own life. And if life is already exciting enough, why would you want to be someone else's life?
I think it's just enjoying and playing with your imagination.
Says the guy with like 50 Twitter accounts.
I think that people who people who dress up and people who have to explore that clearly have a healthy imagination, and also they're confident in themselves doing what it is they want to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. And I think that in the tech community, people are fans of Star Trek or Star Wars or dressing up or whatever, you know, great, go for it, do it, because that's going to inspire you in the future.
Sure.
My fantastic food's arrived, so I'm going to tone down my mic while Nathan takes over for a bit.
What am I taking over with?
Why don't you go ahead with your grump?
Oh, my grump would be, this is connected to another project that I've got going on at the moment, but my grump is the postal service. I cannot believe that in the 21st century, the state, that they're still leaving Amazon packages for me in my greenhouse around the back of the house. The other day I took my little girl, we went to a party at someone else's house in North Manchester, and she left her Barbie and Ken there. And she's into Barbie and Ken from the Toy Story franchise, not really from the Barbie. But, you know, she thinks that Barbie and Ken are Toy Story toys, and that she plays with them along with Woody and
things. No way, that's mental.
Yeah, so, I mean, she does like dressing them up and doing the whole Barbie thing with her, but she doesn't really understand the history of... but, I mean, she's only three, but what I mean is that she came to Barbie through through Toy Story.
That's
not through me encouraging her to play with Barbie, so that's my disclaimer. Anyway, she left Barbie and Ken at a friend's house, and we came home, and she said, I want Barbie and Ken. It's like, well, that's right over in North Manchester, you know. So we left it about a week thinking that we might be able to go and pick Barbie and Ken up, but we didn't. So eventually, the mum of this other family said, oh, I'll just post them back. So she posted them back. We missed the package. Then on a Saturday, I said, right, I'm going to go around to the sorting office, well, the delivery office, and pick up Barbie and Ken. So I went there, and there was a queue out the door of about 20, 25 people in front of us. And we stood around for over half an hour waiting to get to the front of the line to get this Barbie and Ken. And you know how you say your time is worth a certain amount? You know, I don't know how much leisure rate would be, but, you know, I get... If I do consulting work, it's £50 an hour. If I do teaching, it's £30 an hour kind of thing. I probably spent an hour's worth of my leisure time to get these two Barbie and Ken figures, which were probably worth... Well, she got them free, basically free from a charity shop a while before.
You should have bought some new Barbie and Ken's.
Oh, I know. It's just crazy. And I'm thinking, well, this can't be the way that we still send things from A to B and things. But it is. You know, they miss us, and then it gets lost in the system and things like that.
It's archaic. I almost wanted to say charmingly archaic, but then when you're standing in the queue for an hour...
Yes, exactly.
That's not the case at all.
Yeah,
I don't know how. I mean, it's one of these systems, and it's like a lot of things in this country, because we're an old country, and a lot of things have developed. It's developed over a period of hundreds of years. I think, in fact, the Royal Mail tweeted recently that the first postmark was Royal Mail tweeted the first postmark was invented in the 1660s or something like that.
Oh yes, it's a very old system.
So what you're probably seeing in some respects is like a kind of hangover of all that 400 plus years of development of growth without any kind of sort of big bang which wipes everything out and starts from scratch. Because you know, unlike the internet, the internet suffers from the same thing, doesn't it, Ian? You know, the internet is beholden to archaic packet switching or whatever.
Yeah, like IRC.
Yeah. No, but at least packet switching works.
Yeah.
I mean, it has the best effort thing, and it drops packets if they don't get through, but there's ways around that. And but with the parcel delivery service, it's still with letters, it's all automated, and the letters go through these machines and scan and things. But to be honest, we don't really need letters anymore. The only reason why we have letters is so the postman can put junk mail through our letterboxes.
That's absolutely right.
All my bills are online. Mm-hmm. I think my Barclaycard bill has just gone online now. So basically, I don't need to receive any letters apart from all the ones through my front door is parcels. You know, is packages, and I think that's. But you can't subsidise packages really with flyers and with advertisements and things like that, and especially when they don't fit through your letterbox.
Well, it's interesting because I'm aware of some delivery services that offer you timed slots. So, for example, you could say I'm in from 9 till 10 or whatever. Mm. Obviously, supermarket deliveries can do that now, and I wonder whether there is room to bring some of that into what Royal Mail Parcel Delivery Service can do.
Mm.
It's pretty hard to say though, from an uninformed background.
Yeah.
But I mean, the supermarket's got it right. But then again, the stuff they're delivering when you do supermarket delivery,
it's a big load
exactly. Yeah. And so for individual packages, it's significantly more expensive to make that happen.
Yeah.
Are we saying that the Royal Mail needs a new business model?
No. I'm saying that the Royal Mail needs to get over the whole letter business.
A new business model.
Yeah. Oh, okay then. So if Google was running the Royal Mail, what would they do? What would Google do?
They'd read all your posts and then sell little adverts on the side of your envelopes.
No. What I mean is that it actually, for the amount it costs to employ everybody, you could give everybody in the entire country a wireless or kind of 3G printer, and then whatever you wanted to receive, it would just get printed off on a printer.
Oh, that would be a good idea.
Yeah, so you don't...
subsidise with advertising.
You could subsidise it with advertising, or you could say, I actually don't want to have it subsidised by advertising, I just want to pay the price it costs to deliver this thing. Or you could set your incoming thing of no adverts kind of thing. So, or you just have it all electronic and you just don't bother with printing paper out at all. It just comes into like a PDF stack on your inbox kind of thing. So, I don't know, there's companies that do that. They intercept all your mail and then they scan it all and send it all to you.
I'm nervous when it comes to like going completely digital.
Really?
Which is weird. Yeah, I know.
Controversial.
Because I have my my back statements are still sent via letters.
Yeah.
Oh no, that's Los K. Anyway,
We're actually, just to clarify, we're on the top floor of Vivid Lounge, so we've got a great view of
Great
Grand Street, yeah, the canal. That's brilliant.
So one of the things that I always say as an example is when I was getting divorced, yeah, it was great having all my bank statements in paper form, because
going back years, isn't it?
Yeah, because lawyers do not accept printouts.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that's okay. It's a very small niche example, but it was like essential.
Well, yeah. I think that's a good point, because the legal profession isn't really, I guess. Well, they don't deal with electronic information or electronic data.
I've just gone through a court case in the past year,
right.
And they have things called bundles.
Right.
So when they're in court, they say, "Have you got the bundle?" And they go, "Okay." And then somebody literally walks up and they've got a stack of files about, I don't know, 35, 40 centimetres high, or that is the bundle, that is the case bundle, and it gets put in front of the judge, and the judge kind of puts it to one side and says, you know, I'm going to go over that later. So, and this is what happens, you know, bundles get transported around the lawyer district.
It's, again, it's archaic, isn't it? It's inefficient, you think that there is a way of securing information in this day and age, that means information can be transported between parties securely. Mm. And efficiently.
Yeah. Anyway, so my plan of solving this problem is I've got this online, actually. It's a little project that I'm setting up, which hopefully will change the world. It's my only world-changing idea, which is pigeonpost.co. And so you can go there online if you want, pigeonpost.co. And it's about replacing all package handling using UAVs, using little quadcopters or hexcopters, and to deliver packages, and using packet switching, internet protocol packet switching concepts to channel and route the packages from A to B. And also, it's not only UAVs, but you'll have these kind of racks on top of buses. So if you want to get it from A to B, say like this, I want Barbie and Ken to come from North Manchester to here. Instead of it getting delivered from a post office to my address, it gets delivered from where the person is to me. So they put it in a case, and gets on a little UAV, picks it up, puts it on top of a bus. The bus comes into the centre of town. It gets swapped to another bus. The bus drives out to where I am, and then it actually gets delivered to where my GPS says on my phone where I actually am, instead of at my address where
that
I'm actually not.
That sounds absolutely insane.
It is insane, but it is, I would say...
Barbie and Ken.
All for Barbie and Ken. No, all for Barbie and Ken, or a legal document that you need, or a pack of Amazon DVDs, or you've locked yourself out of the car and you need your set of keys. And so your girlfriend can throw a set of keys in a little case and it goes straight to you.
Now when someone hijacks the package.
Well, how would they hijack the package?
They would shoot down a quadcopter.
Why would you do that?
Because maybe there's some valuable information in there.
Why would there be?
I can imagine, so talk about science fiction again, joining the Monarch and like hijacking the person who's got all the information in their head.
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine that. But with your quadcopters.
Quadcopters, yeah.
I mean,
there'd be security things, and you can have, if you have an important document, you can put it in a secure case, which has a tracking device actually on the case as well as on the quadcopter. And then you can put this blue paint spray, so if someone tries to open it without a key or a digital key, it splats them and covers them with blue and things like that.
There's ways around that very easily.
Yeah, I'm sure there is, but there's ways around everything. I have a lock on my door. Anybody could walk up and pick the lock on my door. Yeah. If somebody wants to steal my MacBook Pro, like they did in my old house, they throw a brick through the kitchen window and stole my MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a level of trust and things. And also, if an area has too many robberies and there's too many people stealing from a certain area, you just route all the packages around that area, and then if anybody
that's
wants
smart. That's
and
smart.
Stuff. So anyway, take a look at pigeonpost.co. I would say the technology is probably 3 or 4 years out minimum, and also the regulations and rules and regulations about flying UAVs out of line of sight and stuff all those laws need to change. But I reckon it's a system that a couple of developing nations would especially over like difficult terrain in jungles or in mountainous areas and stuff. It's the way to go to get packages from A to B via D, C, and E.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. You know, cause what you're talking about is
killing off the Royal Mail.
We're talking about is utilising a hybrid approach of your own kind of, you know, your own transportation devices like UAVs, and then piggybacking on things like buses for more long distance.
Existing infrastructure, Whereas the Royal Mail does that a bit with trains and a bit with planes.
Aircraft as well.
But it's basically they have all their own system which runs separate from everybody else's on the road kind of thing.
Unlike, for example, the internet, you know, the constant packet switching, everyone kind of helps everyone else out.
But that's where this would work. So you'd have coops where the packages come in and out of, and it's the coops which are. Mm-hmm. I'm going along the pigeon analogy here. Mm-hmm. It's the coops which are intelligent. So when a package comes in, it's the coop which says, "Oh, this needs to go to this next package." So it's not the quadcopters, it's not the pigeons which are the intelligent part, it's the coops which are intelligent. And so you just, the coops just switch the packet on down the line, and they can plan ahead or use it existing infrastructure kind of thing. And it's an interesting way, but I think if we get rid of paper letters altogether and then just have a physical delivery system for things which have to be physically delivered and streamline the whole thing. So.
That's fascinating. I would love to see a proof of concept of that, just see how it works over, say, a kind of geographic area or urban area or whatever.
Well, you'd start with the rural area.
Is that where you think it would work best?
Yeah, because the rural areas where it costs more. To deliver packages to rural areas, it becomes exponentially more expensive the more sparse the population is. Whereas if you're using pigeon post, you'd put it on the local bus, which is already subsidised by the government because you have to have a local bus service and it would go around. And also you'd get out of the flying UAVs in built-up environments, which is against the law at the moment and things. So,
well, absolutely. And looking around where we're sat today, I think having UAVs buzzing overhead would certainly... raise my eyebrows, say the least.
Yeah. Ian, I don't know how high up in your flat, in your buildings you are, but have you got a balcony?
No.
You've not got a balcony. I know, but I know some of the flats around here, some of the apartments.
Balcony. The guys probably have,
So instead of it coming to your front door, you just have the UAV, pops it on the table on your balcony, and it's pretty secure, and then it flies off kind of thing. So. Or if you're at work, you just have a mailbox on your roof, and so the UAVs never come down to the street level. They'll just drop it on the roof, and then it would come down through the BBC building or wherever you are, and...
I think it's amazing. I'm really impressed with the way you've actually kind of... You're looking to make this like a viable...
Yeah, a viable thing, so. But it would be based on the kind of the service provider model, like the internet. So you'd have service providers providing all the physical infrastructure, and then there'd be like this set of digital standards which kind of make it all work, and physical standards as well.
Wow.
But it'd be based on the service provider model, so you'd just have what do you call it? Load balance? No, what do you call it when you have one provider?
Peering,
that's what I mean. Peering kind of network. So your companies can peer together at different rates and different insurances and things like that. So you can build business models on it. Loads of different business models. Anyway, so that's my. So I hopefully that or something like that. Maybe not this system, but another system within the next 15 years will replace the. Replace the Royal Mail or all these different systems around in different parts of the country, because it is so, like, having people literally walking up to your door and sticking things in your door and say, "We tried to get you but you weren't in, so we've left it in the greenhouse, so you'll have to come and pick it up." I mean, that is so 20th century, 19th century basically.
Or
so,
even 17th century.
17th century, yeah. The thing is, in the 18th century they had you'd have like 5 or 6 different deliveries a day, you know, like in the towns. So I could post something to you, we could have a conversation, like 4 or 5 different messages in a day just by the postal system and things. So it was the internet of its time, but now we have the internet. We don't have to use the internet of the 18th century, do we? So, yeah.
Well, Nathan, I know you have to go relatively soon, don't you?
Yeah. So I'm
wondering if we have. Do you have 10 minutes for Ian to do his grump?
Well, or? I'll tell you what. You guys carry on. I'll just leave my gear here. You throw it in your bag, and I'll come and pick it up.
No. I'm cool with just being a short one. So.
Short one, just a test.
Proof of concept, if you will.
Proof of concept. Yeah. Well, we'll do it again another time, but we'll. I like the whole breakfast thing as well. I like that idea.
Yeah,
cup of tea, breakfast. And,
yeah, I've finished my breakfast now. Of course, you still got some to do, yeah. But, you know.
Welcome back, Ian, from your breakfast. Anyway, so that's Tech Grumps. You'll have to save your grumpiness for next time, Ian.
I've got so much.
So much bile with Ian's.
Oh, man, you didn't even know. Anyway,
we'll leave it there then.
Yeah,
okay, so I've been Nathan Ray. You can catch me at nathanray.co.uk or pigeonpost.co is my little project, side project.
Very good. I'm Josh at Technical Fault, www.technicalfault.net.
That is geeky.
And Ian, do you want to sign us off?
I'm Ian Forrester of the internet, and I'm at Cubic Garden, and you can catch me at cubicgarden.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. This will be online later, hopefully.
Well, it's online now because it's archived on the Ustream, isn't it?
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's recorded on the Mac, yeah. Sure. Okay, then, well, I'll catch you later, guys. Thanks for listening.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. Bye.